You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to GameScoop, episode 231. I'm your host, Greg
hey,
Miller.
Listeners.
No, that's not right! God damn it, Brian Altano! Oh my gosh, what's up? Yeah, clearly things are amiss here in the IGN office. GameScoop is not being hosted by Damon Hatfield for the first time since episode 1.
That, so that means is crazy.
There's been 229 episodes without him.
That's 229 here. What's up, everybody's.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to imagine that since Damon wasn't, you know, this is how we're going to bookend the podcast. This will be the last GameScoop. The first podcast he wasn't on, first GameScoop Damon wasn't on, and he won't be on the last one either. Once again, I'm Greg Miller. Brian Altano interrupted me. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, listeners.
Stop it! No! Jeez, you're blowing the whole gimmick. Now it's not even going to sound sincere when we do it for real. Sam Claiborne, you're joining us.
What's up, everybody?
And then Charles Onyet.
Hello.
The Raging Canadian.
Okay. Yeah, we'll
he
go
seems
with that.
Pretty
no,
calm
fine.
You don't like that name anymore?
Canadian. Calm down. Calm down.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
How's everybody's week? Did the week go well for everybody?
It was great. It was lovely. Mm-hmm. I had a great time. Hey, listeners.
Zipped by.
Oh, I hate you so much. But it's funny. I like what you're doing.
Good.
Damon Hatfield, not dead. Not no. Fired from IGN. Nothing amiss.
So 200 episodes. That man just doesn't get sick.
229 episodes.
229
yeah.
episodes.
Well, no. What used to happen is he would get sick and we just wouldn't do GameScoop.
Oh.
And then a while back, I said, Damon, you don't have to carry this burden by yourself. I'll be your partner. But then I never really do any work for the show. Mm. He still does everything, but I'm just like, oh, I'll help you out every time. And I never do anything.
So this time, terrible partner, that's why.
This time he was like, I have to go record a start show. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, IGN is partnered with the folks from Revelry who do The Office, and we're starting a new YouTube network called Start. So there's a whole bunch of cool shows coming out, including something Altano and I are doing. Wink, wink.
Secret shows.
And Damon is filming some stuff right now for a new show that he's hosting, so there's plenty of good stuff coming down the pipe. But yeah, he couldn't do this show. Mm-hmm. So I said, for once, I'll actually carry my load.
But we can do this show.
Yeah, look at us.
We did a show this week.
We can totally ruin your show, Damon.
Yeah.
This is pretty much like the Peyton Manning situation at the start of the NFL season.
This season?
Yeah.
Like he got hurt right away?
Yeah.
He didn't play 200.
He played so many consecutive. I don't know. It wasn't
I see
the same number of games.
Okay. I'm sorry.
It's exactly the same number.
I thought you were
amazing.
Making a reference to next season. And this is already too much sports. Damon's not happy with this
game
one.
GameScoop is definitely just as physically damaging as football is.
True. I've
gotten so injured on this show before.
me and Altano, we go home every Friday night and we just ice our vocal cords
we put our vocal cords in a big thing of salt. Just move it up and down.
I don't know that's how you
I was doing a pitcher's arm thing, but no one at home can hear that. Sounds like we're eating
whoa,
a lot of salt.
Charles, you like the sports. Do pitchers put their arm in salt?
Yeah, how do you know so much about muscle therapy?
I don't. Don't come to me for any of your muscle therapy needs.
Well, believe it or not.
Hey, listeners.
Believe it or not, against our better wishes, we actually have a good show for you. Plenty of reader questions, plenty of news and scoops, and an interview with the folks behind Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning.
We're going to cut to an interview?
Yeah.
That is so fancy.
I know, right?
I thought they were just hiding in here.
Maybe
somewhere.
We'll do it right now. Nah, we're not going to do it right now. Okay. We'll do it later. Don't worry. Let's start with some news. Charles.
Yeah.
The biggest news of the week, of course, is that you and I have founded the Wolfpack.
Greg, nobody knows what that means. Well, I don't even know what that means.
We're explaining the joke right now. So what happened is, for years, Charles has had to care about PC because games went there first.
Hold on.
Diablo 3 is coming to consoles, and then when that happened, we formed the Wolfpack with Colin Moriarty, where we throw up the wolf signs from NWO, mm-hmm. and we get trophies in PC games.
Okay, a couple pieces of misinformation there.
Right, yeah, first of all,
I haven't had to care about PC. I actually like PC games. I enjoy playing them.
That's like tomato-tomato. That's like tomato-tomato. We're on the same boat.
Okay.
We're on the same page.
Second thing, the news that Diablo is coming to consoles isn't confirmed. That's not something that's 100% happening.
So it's 100% funny. It's funny because, as reported on IGN.com, community manager Micah Whipple, relations to Putnam Whipple, discussed the project on Twitter, writing, quote, "Yup, Josh Mosquito is lead designer for the Diablo console project," end quote.
Okay. Wow. Yes, and that is
Never trust a mosquito.
No, they have a Blizzard has a team assigned to explore. It's like a presidential nomination. Exploring the possibility.
An exploratory committee
of putting Diablo 3 on consoles. Diablo 3 is not out on PC yet. In case you haven't been following it,
but they've been hiring people that work on console games, right?
They've been hiring people for a while. They've actually been very open throughout the past year or so about the fact that, hey, we're trying to make this work on consoles. It's not necessarily going to happen, but they have a team dedicated to it, and they would like to make it happen.
Is there something about the gameplay in Diablo? I'm not a Diablo player. Is that it makes it so you can't play it on the console? Like, I know people don't want to play MMOs too much on the consoles. I mean, even though the DC Universe worked.
Yeah.
Do you need a keyboard and mouse to play it?
Out of all Blizzard's games, Diablo is by far the most console friendly. StarCraft would, in terms of competitive play, would just
not work. I've
seen
people play. You pretty much run around and bash shit, right?
Yeah, so. you can have six active skills in the game, so I think that could be mapped pretty well to a gamepad, and it would just be. I think it would be really irritating navigating it. Inventory and things like that, because there are so many items in that game, and also the real money auction house thing. I can't really see that going over very well with Microsoft or Sony. If it's like, hey,
so
we want to,
you
put...
can get in game items because it's all about random drops, right?
Yeah,
so you
all,
can get
in game
items, and then they made their own market to like regulate that.
Yeah,
right?
and
because originally people just like would auction their stuff, and like they're like, you shouldn't do this, but then they like started supporting it, right?
So Blizzard's method of cutting out piracy from Diablo 3 on PC, or at least trying to, is basically putting the ability to pay money and sell items for money directly into the game. So that's right in the in-game auction house. You don't have to use it if you don't want to. There's a in-game money auction house where you can just use fake gold to buy stuff.
So you just use like PayPal to like. Send people money?
Yeah, I believe it is PayPal.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so you can play the game and theoretically make money. I don't know how viable that's going to be.
You're saying, though, that Microsoft or Sony wouldn't want in on that for their interfaces, their stores, and Microsoft points and stuff
Sony
Bucks.
Sony Bucks. It's called the American dollar.
I don't know what the behind-the-scenes percentage negotiations on that would be. Obviously, that's a powerful incentive. I don't think anything like that really
exists.
Well,
does Blizzard make money off of each sale?
Yes, they do.
They take a cut,
They take cuts off of, and if I remember this correctly, it's a flat fee off of things that you actually post onto the auction house. But if you decide to extract the money that you make off of purchases into a PayPal account, then there's a percentage fee taken. So you're not making the
I can
the
see
full...
how that could get like totally messy on PlayStation and Xbox, especially when you'd have to employ a bunch of people to like keep everything straight in people's accounts. Like,
I'd imagine the negotiation about who gets what kind of percentage would just be a nightmare.
What if you just didn't do that? What if you just didn't sell? What if you just didn't have auctions for in-game items?
What if you just played it on PC?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I think that whole concept would need to be totally reworked for the console
version.
So
that's essential to the game to like buy and sell.
No, it's not essential at all. That's totally a side thing. You don't even have to use the in-game currency auction house if you don't want to. You can just play the game as normal. But the thing about that whole system is that it makes Diablo 3, you have to be online at all times while playing the game. So it's sort of like an MMO. You basically log on to Battle.net. And you, if you disconnect, then you basically can't play the game.
Interesting here. Have you been following how DC Universe Online ran their auction house when it started? I'm going somewhere. This isn't a joke. I'm Damon today. I have to be serious.
Okay. No, I haven't.
On the PSN, what they do is that it's free to use the auction house and put all that in there and, you know, use your in-game currency to do it. However, like, kids are putting their things up there for, like, $93 million. There was Exobytes up there the other day for, like, $100 million.
Oh, that's crazy. Exobytes?
I know. You know how easy they are to come by in Diablo, but they're harder in DC Universe. Anyways, you can go through the DC Universe on interface to their store and then just buy in-game currency. So that's how...
With real money.
You buy the currency from the PlayStation store.
So that's
and then
like
bring
an
in
iPhone
in.
Game, like the Smurfs game where
Totes.
You buy a bunch of hats and your parents have to pay for it.
But that game is made by Sony, though, right?
Correct. Well, it's Sony Online Entertainment, which I know sounds the same, but nah, I mean, they're siloed. They're different. There's a difference
Greg,
there.
Greg, did you really say that I could sell something for $93 million?
Well, 93 credits in the DC Universe.
Which is equal to 93 actual million dollars?
No, because you get like 25 grand for like $3 or something like that. Or maybe 250 grand. No.
How do I get rich in DC Universe?
You don't.
Online,
you're not
Greg.
Making any real money God off damn of this. It. You're making in-game money that you can then spend on Exobytes.
Oh, I don't need there's no. There's no PayPal.
There's no PayPal.
I mean,
no,
I think that's
like
a big leap to like actually take real money and then, yeah, that's crazy.
Charles,
yeah,
speaking, the Wolfpack, we're up and running. It'll be we'll be great down the line.
Wait, can you explain the end of the Wolfpack? Is that because you guys all played Wolfenstein? Is that
I just thought it would be fun to be the Wolfpack, and that's
okay.
What we became.
Okay.
Bottom line, Diablo 3 is still not definitely coming to consoles,
which
so
is
I don't
fine.
Know if the Wolfpack yet exists in official capacity.
Okay, but we officially know that Diablo 3 is coming out February 1st, thanks to Best Buy.
No, that is also
damn first. It. Why do I have all these lies. Old news stories? No, you want to run this one by us over the weekend, Charles?
So there were a picture surfaced, a photograph, if you will, of a stand at Best Buy that shows that showed a countdown that basically led people to believe that Diablo 3 was coming out on February 1st. Turned out to be false. Blizzard community, I believe the community manager posted something that said, no, that's absolutely not happening.
Well,
this
February's misspelled in this little digital
Although
countdown clock.
That may have just been a typo. It was a
tough
typo.
Word. Sometimes.
Yeah, it's
that
a difficult
R
one.
You area.
Yeah, that R can just that's come stupid. And go and sneak it in. You know?
Somebody screwed it up the first time they wrote it, and they're like, we'll just leave it.
Yeah, wait, so all you need to do to shake up the PC gaming world is take a shitty picture of a stand in a Best Buy and then Photoshop it? And
not
then
just
then
the PC gaming
it.
World. You could put up a sign in the Best Buy that said, video games are canceled. And just take a picture
that,
from
is that
your
what it was,
phone,
though? It was,
put
like,
it on Reddit.
Because we
rich.
Don't know the date.
We still don't know the date. Blizzard has
And that's a huge deal?
Well, that game is going to be really big.
No, I mean, think. Just the release date. I mean, do people think it's going to be, like, in the next month?
That's all that's left, basically, to learn about that game. We essentially know everything else, so that's the last, thing to be put in place before it's like, okay, we can finally play this game. Blizzard has said before, early 2012, February 1st seems pretty soon, and so it made sense for Blizzard to sort of debunk that. I would expect, mid-March at the earliest. I would assume they would want to put about a month and a half to 2 months between when they actually announce the release date and when the game actually comes out. So, late March, maybe early April, somewhere in there, I think would be likely.
Interesting. Let's talk about some Nintendo news here. What the hell is going on with Kid Icarus Uprising? It gives you penguin claw hands if you want to try to play it. So the solution is to give you a tablet stand.
It's more than a tablet stand. I have a visual prop here. I'll show you guys.
Oh, here comes the visual prop.
This is good radio.
This is good radio. He's holding up a wristband.
Rub it against the microphone so people at home can hear it.
There it is. That's good.
So what this was is the thumb strap for Metroid Prime for DS.
The original
what,
DS.
What
fat.
You did was you hooked this little plastic thing over your thumb, and then you used that to
call women.
You used that to rub against the bottom screen, so you could have you could
Three
play
wishes.
Like a first person shooter.
Stop.
Okay. And in this game, the idea is that the purpose of that was that you would be able to hold the DS with your hands like a normal controller, and then use your thumb to like move around a little tiny stylus in your thumb, to control a first person shooter.
Yeah.
And this game controls similar to a first person shooter. It's third person, but there's a little cursor, and you're shooting kind of. I don't know if you guys played Sin and Punishment last year. It kind of looks like that when you're flying. Mm-hmm. So you got a cursor you're shooting around. So you need to be able to touch the screen with a stylus. So the idea is that you hold the DS in your left hand and touch it with a stylus in your right hand.
While using the D-pad or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's what's making while using the D-pad, lots going on here. Or the circle pad and shooting with, like, you know, the triggers or whatever you do. It's just a lot to, like, put on your left hand. And people complain about it a lot, you know, like, I don't know.
It's probably the most painful game I've ever played in my life.
Right. So
the
original solution was this tiny little wrist strap, which worked really well. And I don't know why they didn't do that with this. Instead, they have issued a wedge of plastic.
A pack-in stand to allow players to play Kid Icarus without cramps.
Before that, though, there was a second option, which was the Circle Pad Pro, which is the new attachment.
This is a whole other story.
That we also found out this week is playable for Kid Icarus. So basically, the people working on this game have no idea what they're doing.
Well, so that thing hooks on your 3DS and gives it a second analog stick, mm-hmm. like a Vita.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And it doesn't work with any games right now. We have one. We can't play with anything. And you have to, you know, build your game specially to work with that. They're not doing that with Kid Icarus. They're not making it dual analog. Instead, they're making it so you can use the right circle pad that they're adding and draw with your left hand, because it's for left-handed people.
That all hurts my head.
Our president.
What? I didn't know that.
That's
seriously?
True. No, that's absolutely true.
That's awful.
It is not dual analog. It is just a lefty mode.
Oh, that's
so
really
on
bad.
Top of that, for lefties, that plastic thing, that's not going to fit on this giant plastic stand that's coming out.
So how big is the plastic stand?
It's big. It's much bigger than the 3DS. It's stretched, and I can't visually show this to you.
It looks
guys.
Like it looks like one of the things you put the music notes in. Remember when you take music class and you had the little stand there? Like, that's what it looks like.
They sell them at Brookstones for, you know, blind people trying to read big books and stuff like that.
Really?
No.
Is that in there? Blind people looking for big book section?
They can't even make it in that store.
Oh God!
Trip over an electric chair and
it's
fall
really
asleep.
Silly though. I mean, it makes it so you could just set the game on a desk, and I don't think it would be that different. I don't know why.
Well, how are you using the triggers then if it's on a desk?
Just bring your desk on the
bus. Don't
you
need some kind of space in the background?
So I think Rich George
sums it up. Rich sums it up best in his article here. Quote, "It's an interesting solution for a game that has some fundamental problems. Though this solution does provide some new issues, such as making your 3DS not actually portable." End quote.
So we're adding already peripherals to the system to, like, give it different functionality and change games. Like, it needs to have a redesign, right? We all know that.
Well, how do you redesign it? Oh, I guess the tools. If you put two sticks and then made it mandatory,
you take a game like this and you put it on a different platform.
Yeah, or you,
like, put it on the Wii U. Put it on the Wii.
Or, as we discussed, you make a. You just don't make a Kid Icarus remake.
Yeah, there's
because,
that too.
Because this game, like, this is not worth the trouble anymore. I don't think.
Well, I mean, I played it. Nintendo kids have been calling for a new Kid Icarus game,
exactly.
True to the roots forever, and here it is. This is exactly like it was.
Nothing like
those
it was.
Those people will hate that game.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
This game poops in my childhood's mouth.
Jesus. That's an image.
And, like, we're big Nintendo guys, you know? Like,
yeah. Here you are, big guys.
I like Kid Icarus. I like the original game enough. But I, man, this remake is so bad. You see, like, Pit screams these, like, ridiculous catchphrases all the time. Like, when he's fighting a dog,
like,
he's like,
you know,
I'll teach you a new trick.
So bad.
It's brutal. It's like,
you think you're a tough dog? You think
I got arrows!
You think you're top dog? Let's unleash the pit bull.
Yeah. I'm taking you to the pit. No, you're not. No one's going to buy your game.
Does he actually say that? That'd be great if he says that.
Do you remember 90210's Peach Pit? You got any terrible pit puns you want to toss in your
Dylan, why don't you call me?
Well, how much is the stand? It comes with the game?
$400.
It's completely free with the game. I think it comes with every copy at this point.
That's going to be a great package on the shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's so big. I mean, maybe it folds up, but even still, it's going to be a big package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so weird to hear about.
Speaking of big packages.
Brian's been trying to buy a big package for years. You have a small
I've
dick.
Been looking for the perfect gift for you, Greg.
Looks like I'm gonna have to pit these cherries.
Brian. It's enough about talking about this handheld that's struggling like crazy. Let's talk about the PlayStation Vita.
It's selling really well, though, right? I mean, 3DS. It's doing quite well, and games on 3DS actually sell quite a bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was leading into the fact that the PlayStation Vita doesn't do well.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Sarcasm.
I ruined it.
Craigway! Anyways, though.
Hey, listeners.
Hey, Brian. How much would you... I hate you so much. How much would you spend for PlayStation Vita's 3G plan? You buy the you already spent an extra $50 to get the system up to $300.
The what plan?
3G to use 3G on your PlayStation Vita. What would you spend on a monthly basis?
Nothing.
No, okay. Why not?
I'm personally not interested in that. I mean, I'm interested in the Vita. I want to buy one. I will buy one at launch probably, knowing well that it'll drop in price very soon. Mm. But, I mean, I didn't even get a 3G plan for my iPad. Mm. I mean, I have one for my iPhone. Nice. It's a picture of pizza. No one
Sam
at home
Claiborne
can see
has
that.
Shown Brian a drawing of pizza.
Turn the page to read the... Okay, but... I just like personally, I'll play a single player games for the most part on my Vita. I don't really need to browse the web on it. I don't need to call people or get in Wi-Fi battles that you can't even do in half the launch games anyway.
There is Wi-Fi in the system.
Wi-Fi
regardless.
Well, you're getting Wi-Fi regardless. So, but if you wanted the 3G and you bought a 3G unit for $15, you get 250 megabytes. For $25, you get 2 gigabytes.
What am I buying exactly?
You're buying an AT&T month plan. It's month by month, no contract.
Specifically for my Vita, what will it let me do?
Yeah, you could use near anywhere. You wouldn't have to worry about trying to ping a Wi-Fi hotspot.
You probably can't play games online.
You can't play games. You cannot play games, but you can use the asynchronous feature in a lot of games, such as like SOCOM, or I'm sorry, Unit 13.
And you still haven't said the giant price yet, right?
I already did. I just did.
Oh, what is it?
$15 for $250.
Oh, okay.
$25 for 2 gigs. You get a free game when you
do $250.
I mean, that's not a terrible deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would do 2 gigs. I'll do two gigs to try it out. I want to be able to use near anywhere because I'm a huge nerd and I want to see what other people are playing and I want to drop gifts and do things.
So if I have an iPhone and I'm already on AT&T paying for data through my phone, am I qualified for that or is that extra?
This is a brand new month to month. What do you want to do?
There are just way too many extra subscription data plans. It's like, so you have one for your iPad, you have one for your phone, you have one for your Vita. That stuff needs to get rolled up somehow.
That'd be nice.
Especially if it's through the same company.
Yeah,
like, it's just ridiculous
just paying
that
AT&T for three different things in your pocket, that's stupid.
Yeah, like I'm paying AT&T for the same thing just with different products. It's like that needs to be combined somehow.
Depending on your plans too, you might be, if you're one of these guys who can tether your phone, that might be a way around it. So you could always use the tethering feature, try to go, if that works. We're not sure, of course, because can't test it yet. Because none of us are millionaires. None of us have this tethering plan. We all rub quarters together.
Well, tethering, if you're an AT&T legacy customer and you still have the unlimited data stuff, tethering actually breaks that.
Yeah, we tried to do that at E3 last year. Remember, you and I looked into this, that, we'll do this, that way we never have to worry about convention center Wi-Fi. And then it was one of those things, if we did it, we lost our unlimited plan, and if we tried to go back, they wouldn't give it to us.
Yeah.
So is Skype going to be available on it, do you think, or something like that?
Hard to say. I mean, like, I don't know.
I think that'd be the one thing that would justify having 3G on a game console in any... I can't imagine... If you can't play online, because 3G is not that, you know, it's not fast. Like,
yeah.
What are you going to do with it? You can browse the web, use Google Maps.
Oh, well, here's the thing.
Like, could it replace a phone, I guess, is what I'm saying eventually.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. Okay.
Like, why would you want to replace your phone?
Well, the interesting thing about it is everybody's been leaning on this asynchronous play, right? Where you can play wherever you are and then upload your high scores. You know, then you'll upload yours. I'll see you beat me, such like that. One of my most anticipated game that I don't have yet is Mod Nation Racers. I'm a huge Mod Nation Racer fan. I love kart racers. Mm. And this week they announced Mod Nation Racers on Vita will not have online play at all. Like, there's no online racing. Instead, what they're doing
You should play a game called Mario Kart.
I do play Mario Kart quite a bit. Sam knows this. I'm a big Mario Kart fan, so go to hell. But
right there with you.
All right, well, fine.
Hand in hand.
Oh, jeez.
Into Satan's grasp.
You had to just keep going.
Yeah.
Mario Kart 7. Damon, is this what I'm like? This is hard, Damon. Some chucklehead across the table always interrupting.
Hey, listeners.
Anyways, asynchronous only for Mod Nation, ad hoc, local play for multiplayer. And,
That seems like a really bad move for a kart racer.
Yeah.
I mean,
kart racing games, at least nowadays, thrive on multiplayer play.
And that was the big thing, is that, like, I've always thought, like, when Mod Nation Racers came on PS3, I thought, oh my, this is what I wanted out of Mario Kart, you know what I mean? Really HD visuals, for Mario Kart Wii, HD visuals, really tight gameplay. And then when I got so excited to see this, because I like Mario Kart on DS just fine, but obviously I want to get trophies and do things on there. And now, it doesn't even have what the 3DS Mario Kart has, which is weird. But then, for me personally, when I started thinking about it, and probably justifying it, just trying to, you know, get, you know, acceptance in my mind.
Building your wall of
fanboyism. I never play online on Mario Kart to begin with, so is it that big of a deal? What I expected of online on 7 was that I would go onto the IGN fan club, or whatever it is, the IGN server community that I'm a part of for Mario Kart 7, and I would see the best lap times and be able to download those and then race them on my own. And not having that, or not being able to find it easily, because sometimes
you can only really do that with the Street Pass option.
Yeah, but it's not. Is it their lap? Because I had Audrey's ghost once, and I kicked the crap out of it, and I tweeted about it, and she's like, that's just my ghost. I'm like, isn't that you? I don't understand what this is.
It's really confusing.
Yeah.
It just is. Can you still create? I mean, this is about creating levels, right? The Mod Nation.
Yeah, yeah, you can still do that.
So can you take those and then at least send them to people over the internet?
Yes.
Can you do that?
I mean, they're still asynchronous play. So I'm uploading my ghosts. You're seeing my leaderboard times. All the creations, both characters and mods and tracks that are on the PS3 version are available day one on the Vita
and
version.
Creation
to download.
With like touchscreen must be pretty
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's got a bunch of cool features. It's just that they seem to be. You hear about this cool kart racer that doesn't have online play. And you're like, what the fuck? Why would you do that?
But then again, I don't think we all play Mario Kart, and I never play online. I don't know.
Like, no, exactly.
I'm not too into playing.
Honestly,
online,
to be fair, the online isn't that great in Mario Kart, and it's kind of screwed up. Especially like battle mode is all these dumb rules for babies. I mean, I'd just rather just go through the Grand Prix, mm-hmm. beat Audrey's ghost.
Plus, you just lose online. Yeah. Everybody's better than you.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Lots of snakers.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Halo, but I still play it. But I don't know. Mario
See,
Kart
I grew.
Feels
I,
worse.
We all grew up like where we were like the best on our block at a video game. We're like, this is great. I'm the best in my dorm at GoldenEye. And then like games went online. You're like, I'm the worst in the world.
How different would our lives have been? You think if online was there when we were growing up and you knew you weren't that great?
We would have
no self esteem whatsoever.
We'd all be like joggers or something.
No, we'd probably actually be a lot better at video games because if you hit the point where you're like, I'm the best on my block. Mm-hmm. I can beat anyone in my middle school. Right. Then you don't try to get any better. You're just like, well, whatever.
It's true.
There's no more training involved.
Is that what happened to you?
Yeah, it was terrifying.
I think how scary it would have been when all games were in the arcade and you had to go to this like smoke filled room and like there was a bunch of kids that would just beat you up if you were better than them.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember
that's
that.
The golden age. Yeah, Street Fighter, man. Put the quarter on the machine.
Street Fighter, you would just line up your quarters, kids would come over and just whoop your ass. And that was like, for them, you were like, you don't even understand money, you're 20. And for me, like, I had to do so much for this. I had to like fake all these grades on my report card and bring them into the ticket guy and get a bag of tokens for every A
that I never got. That was the punch to the ego, though, when you went to the arcade. And like, I know, I used to play hockey a lot. Every hockey rink had an arcade. There were always a Mortal Kombat machine. There was always a Street Fighter 2 machine. And the guy who would always sit on the Street Fighter machine, just putting quarters in nonstop and just wait for kids to come up and play them. And then he would just destroy you. And it's like, all right, well, great. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Guess I'll go play some hockey. See you guys later.
It's like, do you understand? I had to beg my parents for 3 hours to get that quarter. And now you just destroy me with Ryu and like
in
or
4
Ryu.
Seconds.
Yeah, it's like, all right, awesome.
Charles,
I believe it's Rue.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I only know that because of the pronunciation guide I've been working on this week. Everybody corrects me all day long on it.
Rue. Yeah, look up our IGN pronunciation guide.
Oh yeah, it's really funny.
Charles, you act like money doesn't matter anymore. You've got millions of dollars. You work at IGN. Brian's talking about money doesn't matter to kids.
I'm actually sitting on a mound of cash.
No,
right
I was
now.
Saying that kids don't matter to me.
Whatever. There's this guy called Notch, and he made this game called Minecraft, and it's only like $20. However, a kid on Twitter asked him,
"I think it's $30."
Yeah. Oh well, that's a ripoff. No wonder this kid. The kid on Twitter says he can't afford it. What does he do? Notch says, "Pirate it."
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I mean, that's fine. That's his prerogative. It's his game.
To a fan on Twitter, Notch said, "I really like the game." Oh, I'm sorry. This is what the kid says. "I really like the game, but lack the money to buy it. I thought I might at least ask for a free account before piracy." Notch's response: "Just pirate it. If you still like it when you can't afford it in the future, buy it then. Also, don't forget to feel bad." Winky face.
Winky face.
I mean, that's a very underground type of attitude. It's just spreading awareness and giving people the ability to play takes precedent over profiting, and that's. I think that's newsworthy.
He's cyberpunk.
Exactly. You will never hear that from any of the bigger publishers. That is the worst thing of all time.
Cass Harai, I don't have money to buy PSP games and pirate them.
Go to the store and shoot a guy and steal them all.
Jesus.
Rob a Best Buy at gunpoint, those typo-ridden idiots.
I think there is some precedent, right? I mean, the Doom guys were always like, yeah, just take it. You know, they were always all
yeah.
They
but they also had a same sort of like indie thing. I think what Charles is saying is like if Minecraft was like an EA game.
Oh well,
you couldn't like the lead designer or whatever couldn't pop on Twitter and be like, ah, fucking steal it.
Yeah, it's just it's very anti-corporate messaging. I don't know, you know, and there is a space for that type of mentality to continue to be expressed. I think you know,
but isn't piracy killing games?
It's difficult to say how much money I think studios are actually losing because I mean the argument's been brought up time and time again. The people who are so committed to not paying for a product, who pirate, You know, who knows, like, if you were to somehow cut out all piracy, if they really care enough to go and buy the game anyway. They're just doing that because they want to. I'm sure, you know, there's definitely a percentage there, I would assume, that of people who would buy if they weren't able to pirate.
I mean, we ran that news story a few weeks back about the most pirated games of 2011. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
And one of them, I think, was, like, Crysis 2 was, like, 3.5 million times it was downloaded.
People like those graphics.
Yeah.
Graphics.
I mean... But that's you're running that game on a very expensive computer, I assume.
Every computer is very expensive.
It's true. That's
also not true.
I watched Clements build his. They're not cheap, Charles. And I even asked you. Actually, I was like, I want to build a basic computer. You were up in the thousands. I was like, oh my god.
No, well, I was asking. Fertilla's
going to need surgery one day.
I don't. Even, how is
you're
that possible?
Get a hot dog what? Bun surgically attached to it.
Does Minecraft have like a free demo version?
I think
there is.
I think
there?
You can test something for free. I don't know. I haven't looked at it in a while. I think there was a version that you could go in and just play randomly, yeah. But it wasn't a full-featured version.
I mean, his business plan is like still, like even with piracy, it works perfectly because you don't just play Minecraft for a few weeks and then buy a new game. Like, you play it all year. You know, so if you are going to play it for free for a while and then be able to afford it eventually, like you probably have a better chance
I
to
mean,
buy it.
It's a goodwill gesture.
And
you know what I mean?
That mentality does sort of fit in with how the game was distributed anyway, which is, you know, the pricing tiers just kept ramping up closer to the game's eventual, you know, quote-unquote release date. It was cheaper earlier on, and then it got more expensive, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's in line with what he's been saying, and as Notch says, it's been his mentality all along.
And they've made tens of millions of dollars.
I don't even know how much money they made. It's a lot. It has to be insane.
Yeah.
Their sales counter on their site, which is publicly displayed, is, you know,
they're quadruple
trillionaires. For the final version, how much is it? Like the sales counter, is it like a millions?
It's cumulative over since the game went on sale.
Yeah.
But it continues to skyrocket. It's not really slowing down that much. And the game is coming out on Xbox at some point. So we'll see how that affects
just pirate it off Xbox Live.
His ability to say that kind of thing, because I assume Microsoft would probably not be as happy with that kind
but
of language.
You can't, well, I guess can you pirate Xbox Live games? I know you can pirate Xbox games. Like
I haven't tried.
But I mean, like, is it possible? How would you get the code to even pirate it? I don't think that's possible.
Hack the review site thing that we all use sometimes.
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Whatever.
That would take a. Yeah, I don't know.
There's so geniuses work, like, out there. I remember when I said, "How would you hack the PSN?" It's impossible. Yeah. It's a computer. You can't do it. Look how that pains.
But like, you know, ripping done, a DVD, Greg. And playing it on, or like playing it on a burner or whatever. You know, that's one way of. I think that's how people do Xbox stuff. So that's the only point of me. I don't know. Xbox Live stuff.
Let's do some quick hits here. To begin with, Charles, Wolfpack member.
Stop doing the Wolfpack.
Wolfpack! Yeah! I was right. Last week I said XCOM. It's not coming out this year. It's not going to make 2012 March, whatever. Demos. You remember this.
Oh, yeah.
And I was right. What happened, Charles?
It got delayed.
2013.
The Game Informer issue that came out that has the reveal of Enemy Unknown, which is the Firaxis strategy game, the XCOM Firaxis strategy game. That is this year still, in the fall. And then 2K Marin Shooter was bumped to 2013.
Now, is it fiscal year 2013 or 2013?
The magazine says 2013. There's no mention of fiscal year.
Okay.
So calendar year 2013.
GameScoop listener Gio wrote into GameScoop at IGN.com, just like you can. And he shot off his mouth a little bit on Saturday or Sunday over the weekend. And he said, "Now, Greg, I will personally buy you, send you, or possibly deliver you a pizza of your choice, size, topping, crust even, from your favorite pizza joint in the Bay Area, if... FPS XCOM doesn't come out this year." Well, his name's
not coming
Ike.
Out this year.
Yeah, so
pizza
there you go.
Party.
Pizza party, Ike. So yeah, he earlier he was like, "Well, maybe it'll be fiscal year." So we'll wait. We'll see what he says to that. But
yeah, according to the magazine article, it just says 2013. That's when that shooter will come out. Which makes sense. There's no way there's enough space in 1 year for two XCOM games.
Are you gonna try a new pizza place?
No, never. But cheese pizza only.
Really?
I find what I want. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll try new. But when I'm milking a free pizza out of a kid, I'm gonna get what I want.
What about Little Star? You don't like
Little Star? I like Little Star. Fine. Okay. I think Pachisi is a more honest. This is the argument.
Did you almost say more honest pizza?
No, I'm not doing the Papa John's. Not doing the Papa. In my opinion, if being from Chicago, I think you go in two directions. You're either a big fan of Lou Malnati's or you're a big fan of Giordano's. I'm a big fan of Giordano's, and Pachisi is Giordano's reflective.
Greg, will you come to New York with me?
Yeah.
For a weekend.
Yeah, I went with Colin.
We'll just have a pizza party.
Oh, man. Me and Colin ate pizza all the time in New York Comic Con. We kept bringing them back to our hotel room. We got caught in Occupy Wall Street pizza.
So what's your opinion? New York versus Chicago?
Well, I mean, they're completely different. Like, yeah. That's the thing.
Okay, so it's strictly a mood thing.
Totally. Every time I order from Cheese, I rarely order Chicago style. I usually just get their thin crust.
Yeah.
And not their thin, which is like the cracker thin, almost like St. Louis.
Yeah, it's nothing like New York. None of those are really like New York style. But
big slice, fold it in half. That's awesome.
Is St. Louis pizza actually like a St. Louis thing? I never heard that term. That's crispy.
They were really protective of it when I was in Missouri, that was their thing. And I was like, I ate really thin pizza in Chicago, but I'm not going to fight you on this. Whatever. Yeah. I got enough things to fight about.
St. Louis is so mad right now.
I'm sure they are. All the listeners right
there. Yeah, because their pizza sucks.
The arch is swaying because they're all like so mad.
We love our cracker pizza. What's wrong with you?
Emos. Charles, we got more delays and development news.
Okay.
This game called STALKER 2 is it's got a bunch of periods in there. Mm-hmm. It's an acronym for something.
I don't remember what the acronym is.
Is there like a little kid in the room we don't want to hear?
Stalker 2 still in development. On their Facebook page, they posted, the Stalker team is extremely happy. Why? Because we're continuing to work on Stalker 2 after the holidays.
Yeah, so there were stories that came out late last year that basically said the game was in big trouble, was basically done, and now they're still working on it. You know, I've put in several emails to them, and no response yet to find out exactly what's going on. But it sounds like, at least for now, it's still in development. I personally love Stalker. Clear Sky was not so good, but Shadow of Chernobyl, Call of Pripyat were both, and I probably pronounced that incorrectly, they're both excellent games, great atmosphere, and lots of ways to customize yourself. It's like a post-apocalyptic first-person shooter and with open-world elements. It's really cool. Okay. So I hope that Stalker 2 winds up happening, because I would absolutely love to play that game.
I thought interesting in the news story we sourced the fact that 5 years after IGN ran the first preview of the original Stalker, it shipped.
So it's very appropriate that this is happening with Stalker 2, because the original Stalker... the development cycle on that game was completely nuts. The entire design of the game seemed to change with every new preview. It's like, oh, we have vehicles. Oh, now there aren't vehicles anymore. So it's very appropriate for the franchise, because the development cycle of the first one was a total nightmare.
Are there just a couple of guys working on it? Is that the idea?
I actually don't know how big their team is at GSC.
Apparently, they're really excited to keep working on it after the
really holiday. Excited.
So they what if they just hold on to it forever? They never let us have it. Like, no, this is our toy.
This is what we like doing.
We just want to get together, hang out with
the bros.
We keep
getting tax breaks, and we're just going to keep working on this game.
What crazy holidays do they have in Russia?
I don't know. Why would I know that?
You know everything else.
You look Russian.
Yeah.
There's one holiday where
here comes something racist.
Everyone doesn't drink, and they all go to work for a day.
Oh my God!
Wow.
Jeez, Louise. Remember?
I believe they're based in Kiev in Ukraine.
Okay. I like Chicken Kiev. I don't know if that's connected.
Yep, that's definitely connected.
Is it?
Yep, 100%.
I think you're being sarcastic. I can't tell.
Nope.
Two reviews of note came out this week.
It's actually from Kiev, St. Louis.
They love their cracker thin chicken Kiev.
Cracker chickens.
The Cube review went up on IGN PC. I gave it a 6. Nick Colin gave it a 6.5 in OK. Everybody who walked by stopped and said, is this Portal? Because it looked like Portal with Dragon Age hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not Dragon Age hands. Skyrim hands.
Or like Bioshock hands.
Yeah, Bioshock hands.
It's Cube.
Is it?
Cuba.
Cuba?
Well, it's
really?
Q-U-B-E, right?
Q-U-B-E, yeah.
I'm going by the rules set up by the game Kix. Q-I-X.
So it's Cube.
I don't know. I like Cube better. I think it's like how Sony puts Core in front of everything like that.
Well, if it's Cube, then it has to have a little asterisk after the Cube, like Cubert.
All right, well, strapline was Portal, it ain't, notable quote from the review. But there's a fine line between appropriating and emulating, which is perhaps indistinguishable until you cross it. Cube is a game that has wandered across that line.
Oh,
that's
God
good, Nicole.
Damn it.
Nicole and Awardsmith.
You should have used the word ambled. I think that's a better word
ambled?
Than wandered.
Well, you can go on and change it. Go ahead.
Okay.
It's like a wiki.
Yeah, that's true.
The other review, Amy from Colin Moriarty, a PSN Xbox Live game, a 2.0.
I heard that was great. Oh, 2.0.
2.0. That's bad. That's the opposite end of the scale you want to be on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Horrifyingly bad was the strapline. A quote review quote of note. If you want a downloadable game for $10, scroll randomly through the titles offered by your downloadable service of choice. Randomly stop on a game and buy it. Your money will have almost certainly been better spent in lieu of buying Amy, which absolutely no one should play.
You know what was another bad Amy? The talking gorilla from Congo.
I thought you were going to say Chasing Amy. I was going to jump across the table.
Oh, what about the pink hedgehog?
Did you just make a Congo movie reference?
I did.
Never forget, Charles.
Amy, good gorilla.
Speaking of one and only Colin Moriarty, he is putting up his review in progress for Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning.
Hey, listeners.
I hate you so much. From 38 Studios. We're going to beam Colin in, and I'm going to go interview somebody with Colin. That's right, everybody. We have a very special segment about Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. I am Greg Miller. Still, I'm alongside Colin Moriarty. Colin, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. You want to say Beyond?
Beyond.
Beyond, indeed. Now, like I said, all about Amalur here. We're joined by Joe Quadera. That's correct. It right?
Yeah,
I nailed it. I knew spelling it out would work. Your lead combat designer.
That's correct, yeah.
And then we also have some new guy who I've never, ever heard of before, Ken Ralston. Now, you've written down a few titles here. You have Executive Design Director, which I believe is probably the real one, and then internationally celebrated game designer. Huh.
Actually, that's the one that's on my card.
Is it?
Yes.
You're that guy. What have you made again? What games have you worked on for the kids who are just listening right now? These kids who don't even know anything beyond the PSP.
Well, back before the Earth cooled, I made a game called Paranoia, which was a celebration of doom. You know, everybody dies. It's a lighthearted game. What is it? And then Dungeons & Dragons, RuneQuest, paper and pencil games. And then I came to the hallowed halls of computer games.
You sold your soul.
Yes, for filthy lucre. And had the great good fortune to be the lead designer on Morrowind and Oblivion. And now I am working with Big Huge and 38 Studios on the best game in modern history called Reckoning.
Now, you have to say that, of course. Yes. I'm sure Kurt Schilling whipping you every day and driving that into your head.
It's my chemicals that make me say that. And the way I say it.
We pulled him out of retirement to do it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Out of cryogenic freeze. Just let's make a game.
Yeah.
Colin.
Yes.
They have to say that. We say it's very good as well. We've enjoyed it every time we've played it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I played it first, I guess, in Las Vegas. I was with Anthony, who's one of our PC editors. We were really impressed with the game, and so impressed that we've been, you know, given a build of the game, and we're going to be reviewing it shortly. My review and progress will be posted every Friday leading up to, February, early February, when we get to review it. So, but it's a great game, and I'm afraid it's kind of getting lost in between, you know, Skyrim had just come out, and Mass Effect, which is another great role-playing game, is coming out right after Reckoning. So what do you guys, you know, when you talk about Reckoning and you want people to really, you know what it is and put it on the map, what is it about Reckoning that makes it special amongst all the RPGs on the market?
It's all the combat.
Of course.
It's the thing that I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really, though, it's when you're playing an RPG, and for me, when I play an RPG, I always want the combat to be more action-oriented, or at least get some adrenaline going or some sweat going on the controller, so I at least feel scared a little bit. And so, really, when you play our game compared to any other RPG out there, you're going to at least feel that, like, testosterone or adrenaline or whatever it is, and it's some endorphins getting into your brain because the combat is, I don't want to use the word visceral, but it's intense.
Okay. Well, that's the thing, right? Is that, I mean, some RPGs get bogged down in this great story, all this stats. But the combat isn't that great. But when you play your game, it feels like action. It feels like an action game, right? Like you're running around. I remember the first time at E3 when I got, I don't know its official name, the frisbee looking deal that I could throw in.
Chakram.
Of course. How could I not remember that one?
Come on.
And and he's throwing it around, and it was, you know, it felt like an awesome action game.
Yeah. And that's, Ken loves the Chakram too. Like he talks
about
Ken.
Chakram Brothers. Yeah. That's great.
All right. Next.
So I think, you know, I think the combat is one of the hallmarks of the game, or it seems like it is from the experience I've had with it. And you know, there are reasons why, you know, I'm going to say, Greg, I don't like Dark Souls because of the combat. But this game seems to have, it seems like you said, it seems to really focus on combat. But there's all this other stuff that I'm really excited about, too. When we were at Comic-Con doing Podcast Beyond Live, I stopped in at the Amalur story panel, and I was fascinated by, you know, the mythology behind the game. And can you guys tell me a bit about how deep this story is, and obviously this 1,000-year history, this R.A. Salvatore kind of inspired fantasy world?
Times 10. I think it's 10,000
years. 10,000 years. Yeah, yeah. That's even more absurd. So tell us about that.
It may shock you to find out that most role-playing games don't have that level of background. Even with the anal retentive games master kinds of mentality from Dungeons & Dragons, where you'd have the guy would have 12 binders of all background stuff that you definitely didn't want to hear about. R.A. comes from that. He's a paper and pencil game designer. I know him from back in TSR. He loves that stuff, but he's also a hugely talented professional, and he also knows how to tell a story. And all those pressures driving him to focus it made him make something that, well, I am going to forgive him because he's better a writer than I am. I think it's only fair, though, to hate him to a certain degree, because I've always wanted to be that good. And it's bad to have it thrown up in your face that you're not that good. But I've gotten over it. So the question is, you know, why is it better? Because it's written by R.A. Salvatore. It has a lot to do with it. But it's also been worked on by those guys up in Providence, 38 Studios, working on an MMO. And therefore, it has a huge richness. So all of our needing to share it has made the need to communicate it very good. So it's unusually well documented, and it's full of good stuff. When trying to choose a setting, we were poisoned for choice. We had too many choices. So that's just a hint.
Yeah, I'm glad you can forgive him. For me, he will always be the man who killed Chewbacca, and he will never be forgiven.
By the way, he's very really sensitive.
Never be forgiven.
That comes up very often.
I know. He was really defensive about it a long time ago, and I interviewed him, and that was question number one. And then the interview stopped.
And then that was it.
Oh, yeah. I shuffled my papers and left.
His headphones went off, and he said, this is over.
Obviously, R.A. Salvatore wrote, 21 New York Times bestsellers. So this is a guy who knows how to write. He's a great fantasy author. I know at the Comic-Con panel, they were talking about something called the Bible.
Yeah,
Can you kind of explain what that is? Is it really a one book that you guys have?
It's a wiki now, in the sense that it started off as a standard Bible. I mean, he's used to that.
The old standard Bible.
No, it was not King James. Forget which one it was.
Copernicus chapter 12.
But now it's elaborated. Now it's elaborated into a rich wiki with a lot of detail, names, places, and all that stuff. It's just delightful to be pillaging it for details. And then for our fun, it's still got enough open-endedness to it that we can improvise into it gloriously.
And you know, I know they were saying at the panel, I mean, is there literally no character, nothing in that game that doesn't have a backstory? I mean, they were making it seem like everything existed for a reason and somehow is intertwined with each other.
There's a tiny subset of things that is occasionally mentioned, and then I'll look through using the search function, not able to find its antecedents, but we are busily taking those things and filling them in. It's not a joke. It's wherever we find an edge that looks like a really great setting designer builds too much content with hooks on the end of it. And then as he develops, he'll start to attach those hooks to other things. Some of the hooks aren't attached. We're using the hooks that aren't already attached because it's a well-put-together world. And then we're putting our own stuff to it so that the coherence of it is by design by a great writer with a good sense of how to make too many hooks.
Mm-hmm. And is the idea, I know, you know, this MMO is in development that we don't know a great deal about, and obviously this whole Kingdoms of Amalur franchise is probably going to be something you guys are going to run with. So how, you know, for instance, I know the MMO takes place, 1,000 years before or after Reckoning? Do you guys know that off the top of your head?
It's after.
That's the question that stumps them. They have this huge Bible and this wiki with like every. I don't know how many years it was.
You think we memorized it? You guys don't know about documents. Believe me.
I love dense games and dense stories. It's really one of the reasons why I love Mass Effect, frankly, is because you can travel all these planets and just read about this nerdy fictional shit, basically, that only I would be interested in, I guess. But it's cool because they were talking about at the panel too that in the MMO there will be, for instance, castle ruins that were a real castle in Reckoning. So, I mean, is this something you guys really have to pay attention to as these games are developed parallel to one another? Is it something the teams have to talk to each other? Or is it kind of you're just doing your own thing and then the MMO will work off of what you guys have done since your game comes first?
No, we always have to talk about pretty much everything, especially if it's like a landmark, like a city, because that city could exist in the future or may be ruined or may be taken over by another species of creature. You really have no idea, so you need to be always working on that level of talking to them and making sure, because if we make it and it's in their game, they're going to have to put it in their game too. So we're sometimes creating work for them, which is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you screw with them? You're just like, oh, let's drop a broken down brick wall over there. And
they have to write a story about it. Yeah. So would you guys, you know, say that, you know, Reckoning has maybe the deepest story in any RPG as far as how much, you know, as far as you guys know? I mean, you know, knowing obviously the JRPG slant from back in the day and obviously Western RPGs today, this seems like the deepest and densest RPG I've ever heard of. Would you guys say that that's fair?
That could well be true. I've seen a lot of them. It is okay. I've seen a lot of different things work from the inside. It's certainly the largest and it's the best articulated and the most internally coherent. And the other thing that we really haven't talked about so far, you like reading about the nerdy stuff. What I'm telling you, the great stuff is the stuff that you don't get to read about.
Yeah.
The franchise secrets that you put together that underpin everything. They're mysteries. They're things that we don't let you know, but we have to foreshadow it. And therefore, we leave these hooks for you guys to play when you say, I wonder if that means something. And then the second release, you know, that you do, there's a, wait a minute, there's beginning to be a convergence of things. So those mysteries you get in like an X-Files or what's really going on out there. So right. That stuff's in there too.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love that stuff. Yeah. Preparing for the future, as it were, Greg.
Yeah, I hope there's a smoking man in yours.
So we've talked about combat, we've talked about story, obviously, which is, you know, which is seems to be really one of the pillars of the game. But we also have this kind of character customization option in Reckoning, and I was kind of curious if you guys can tell the listeners a bit about that, because that seems to be one of the hallmarks of the game too, and something that I don't think a lot of people are talking about, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of like our RPG stance is that you should be able to choose your class and choose your race, and you're not necessarily a specific person in the world. Like, you are selecting who you are going to be. So I make always this guy named Branyan Bearmeadow, and I can choose from two races of human, two races of elf, and male or female on either side. Then choose your patron god, and you have all sorts of different ways to adjust your face and adjust your tattoo and your beard stubble. And it's, as far as your customization goes, you can make all sorts of different combinations. So it's pretty awesome, and I love running through the world as my sort of mustachioed naked dude.
Yeah. And what about Fate? I mean, obviously Fate and Destiny plays a huge part in character development, so can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, and that's really sort of one of those mysteries that goes into the MMO, is that you start out the game and you realize that you're dead. So you have been resurrected through this device called the Well of Souls, and you're the first and only person to ever have done this. And fast forward to the future in the MMO, it'll be everybody will be able to be using this Well of Souls and therefore immortal, but you are the
my
first.
My God.
You are the first, and you have a backstory. You died. You don't know how you died. So as you play through the beginning of the game, it's sort of just like trying to just figure out what's going on, because the Well of Souls is under attack by the person who made it. The person who made the Well of Souls really has no idea how it worked or how you even became alive. So you have these initial mysteries just to go find out, and then eventually go find out who your killer was.
And I mean, let's get down to numbers and nitty gritty. I mean, it seems like you know, we keep using the word dense. It's a dense game. Apart from the story, apart from all these things, it seems really long and meaty. And obviously, RPG fans like me are really going to like that. I mean, that's the best part. Give me some numbers, though. How many quests? How many side quests? How many hours can a person expect to dump into this game? Because it seems like it could take an exorbitant amount of time, which I think is going to be very pleasing to RPG fans.
One of the stats that I love is we tried to do a speed run, where 100% speed run, and it took the QA testers over 200 hours to complete 100%.
Are you going to go for the platinum in this, Colin?
Yeah, I am going to try to get the platinum in this.
We'll give you a 1-point achievement for that. As far as, like, there's over 120 handcrafted dungeons. None of our dungeons are randomized or, like, created by any sort of procedural means. They're all handcrafted. They're there for a reason. Every little flower is placed. Quests. I have no idea how many quests, but if I can tell you over 200 hours, if you try to do them all, there you go.
200 hours and doing it as quickly as possible. So, yeah, I like to explore every little nook and cranny, so it's going to take me a little longer than that. I have my hands full with this review.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm looking forward to this review in progress over the next 6 months.
I think over 10 novels worth of dialogue. It's like one of the most, we when we were doing the voiceover recordings, we were just throwing the poor people for a loop because they'd never seen so much voiceover in anything really ever done. And I just realized, oh, you know what? I don't think anybody ever really has this much voiceover in any game. So there's a cool revelation there.
I noticed in the voice acting that, you know, there's all these fictional and made-up names and made-up, you know, towns and gods and all these things. Do you guys have, just out of curiosity, do you have someone, because we always make fun of Heavy Rain, which was clearly Europeans speaking English using, like, origami.
And the origami killer. Right.
Do you guys have people, your own people there that kind of tell them how to say things, or are you kind of let the voice artists work things out for themselves?
No, we definitely, we have a narrative designer sit on every voiceover recording and help them with the name stuff. And then beyond that, the person sitting actually in the recording studio was making notes for every name that could possibly come up, because we had so many more than we knew. And so the poor, like, recording person is just, like, he had this huge Excel spreadsheet. So they ended up with, like, you know, 500 different names and how to say each thing.
That's awesome. Quantic Dream, take note. All you had is one word. They had
one word you had to nail.
And origami.
Origami. Yeah. This whole system's out of order. I'm going to get that origami killer, and then I'll tell you.
Yeah, that was funny. So, all right. So, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning is soon. Tell me the date. Tell me the release date. Tell me the platforms. When can people find it?
February 7th. PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3.
Okay. Yeah. PlayStation 3 being the most important of the consoles, you'd say?
Obviously.
Yeah.
If we get... I've been burned before. If I get 60 hours in, is it going to continue to run okay? That's my main concern. Somebody's been looking at that, right?
I will give you my personal guarantee on that one, yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one.
We're a little wary after the Skyrim.
Yeah. Well, thanks for just beating the horse over the head. I was trying to, you know, dance around it.
Well, I'm not dancing around
it. All right.
All right, so we're excited. Of course, keep it tuned to IGN. We'll have the review in progress and the review coming up in the next few weeks. I will be very busy in the meantime. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
We are very excited about the game.
I tell you, there's no better interview combination than me and Colin Moriarty. Right, Brian?
That was great.
Wolfpack! Yeah, Charles! He's one of the members, one of the founding members over there.
Who?
Colin.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, we're allowed to
support. I don't know why they're putting so many cars in that game, though.
I know. It's an interesting one. It was an interesting choice for the hover cars to be in there.
Yeah, I didn't really see the tie-in with Football Manager 2012.
I know, that was really weird. I mean, why would you want to kill a football manager with a sword?
I think we've all known that it's gone to hell since Ryan Geddes went over there.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the end of it.
Thanks a lot, Ryan Geddes.
Jeez.
I miss you.
Remember, listeners, if you want to be part of the show, it's gamescoop@ign.com. You can reach out just like Larry did. Larry is passing on the good vibes to you.
Are we checking in with the listeners?
No, we're not.
God damn it.
Hold on. It will be very clear when you need to say your line. And I know you're going to do some joke about it. Nope. You're not going to do it.
I'll do it right.
Oh, Larry is gifting you Gunslinger over on the Xbox. He says, I got a DLC code for the full game and thought I would gift it since I really didn't like the demo. Well, thanks, Larry. Ringing endorsement. But if you have the fastest fingers, you could walk away with Gunslinger. It is... XCYSR-P7YCCDX2DV-W36GX-WGCTJ. That last one was a J. So whoever gets that, send good vibes to Larry. Tell him how much you love him. Let's check in with the listeners.
Yay.
Hey, listeners.
There it is! The moment we've been waiting for! The passing of the torch. Oh, my God. I tell you what.
Am I hired?
Yep. You replace me now.
Nice.
Next Game Scoop, it's you and Damon.
Nice. I give the PS4 a 2 out of 10. Greg Miller.
Wow. What, you're taking my name?
I'm taking your job.
Oh.
That news also came out this week.
What?
The PS4, the no announcement thing?
Oh, yeah, man. It goes back and forth all the time. Yeah, I guess you can screw up the flow of the show. What do I care? I'm just the host.
Okay.
Okay.
Back to the news, everybody. Sorry, listeners.
Come I get didn't know some. If the listener email was going to cover that or not.
Nah, I don't think they do.
Okay.
But yeah, PS4 not going to be at E3, apparently. PS4. They, you know, there was rumors that Xbox whatever and PS4 would be at E3. Then Kaz from Sony came out and said, no, we're not making any announcements. But he left it kind of vague. And here's my whole thing is that I remember last year when David Jaffe was like, I'm not going to be at E3. My game's not ready. Blah, 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 blah. And then he rolled out an ice cream truck and unveiled Twisted Metal. So Sony is not above lying to our face about anything.
Yeah, you know, I just thought it was odd that that would be addressed this early. Normally you would get a no comment on something like that, or we don't comment on rumors and speculation. But to get a no, that's not happening, that is actually more suspicious than a no comment. Because it seems designed to throw off
the trail
people who are saying, oh, this is going
to
happen.
Really? I think it's not happening. I think they're in no rush to get PS4 out.
There's an argument that why would people keep buying the PS3? I mean, it's already not selling great. No, you're trying to make up room.
They could drop the PS3 another $50 or $100 or something and sell like as many as they need to for a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think they're actually going to release it anytime soon, but I think they at least need to hint at it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's playing a game like, and I've said this before, but I don't think anybody finished Uncharted 3 and said, oh man, I really wish that looked 2 times better.
Yeah.
It looked amazing. It was fun. And, I don't think Sony's in any rush.
Maybe they'll debut their giant controller with a little TV in it.
No.
Maybe. Not do that. The Vita, you mean?
No, I think he means the Wii U.
Oh, God. Yeah, we don't need any more of
those. That one exploded in your face. Well.
Did you see that Google demo that we have on IGN? That's cool. So the Wii U was at CES this week.
Yeah.
And, taking over your whole show.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And I guess this was at E3, but there's a Google Maps thing they were showing where basically they're using I've never seen Google Maps function this well, but it's just like driving down the street of a metropolitan area. Uh-huh. And that's on the big screen. And then the Wii U controller is in front of it. And basically you can just turn and just turn and look all around with the Wii U controller. And even though that thing's just going down the street, you can look to the side and behind you and see the street going back. And in real time, it's flawless. It's just pointing all around.
Prediction, that won't ship with the Wii U. That will never happen on the Wii U.
Mm. Well,
not because I'm against the Wii U, just because I've seen I remember the PlayStation tech demos with all this garbage that was going to be doing. Right. Never did it.
But and there's no use for it. But what if, you're building a 3D environment where you're moving through space and you're looking all around you with the Wii U
Pokemon
controller.
Snap.
It looks really cool.
Yeah, I could go for a good Pokemon Snap.
It would be really funny. But yeah, I thought that was really neat.
Hey, listeners. the first one comes from Win Smith. It's related to what we've been talking about. Hey, guys, Scoop. If you had to send 3 games back in time to yourself to show your past self what video games were like today, what 3 games would you send back to represent all current games?
How far back in the past?
Let's say 13. We're 13. No, let's go farther back then. When did you get your first console? When you got your first console, the day after you got your first
1986,
console?
1986. I was 5 years old.
So I'm saying 89-ish, 88.
If my dad came home for my birthday and set up my NES, and then this weird dystopian alternate future version of me from 25 years later walked in with Uncharted 3, I would die.
I know, right? Can you imagine that? That's what I was thinking too.
My head would explode. I wouldn't be. I was just I'm playing Punch Out for the first time, da 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 da, and some guy walks in, he's like, "These are video games of the future. They look better than movies do now."
To that point, though, you could have brought back any shitty Kinect fighting game, and you would have been like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, it's true. You're Sonic Racers 2, Snowboard Edition. Oh, this is crazy. Yeah.
I mean, remember in Back to the Future 2?
This is so much better than Deadly Towers.
Well,
so,
I think Elijah
so
Wood's character.
Tony Hawk Ride.
Yeah. It's full of technology. But I remember in Back to the Future 2, when I think it's Elijah Wood's character, or the kid next to Elijah Wood, says, oh, you have to use your hands, that's a baby's toy.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's crazy. I couldn't even picture what a game would be without a controller. And now here we are.
Yeah,
now here jumping we are. Around like a bunch of morons and Wipeout.
Yep.
Uncharted would be my pick. Totally, because I think it's one. I often think what if you just brought anybody back, Benjamin Franklin? You know what I mean? You showed him something, you could convince him that that's real life.
He would drop dead.
Yeah,
you would kill Benjamin Franklin on the spot.
No, I'll be $100 bill
in the field holding a kite.
Charles, what would you bring back? Shogun?
I think Half-Life 2. I would have to send that back. Mm-hmm.
What about Portal 2?
Portal 2 would also be a really good pick, I think, just in terms of storyline and story delivery and what dialogue could actually be in-game.
Yeah.
I think another good one would be if you took back Mario Galaxy or something, because it's people are just playing...
See how platformers evolve?
Oh, you're see how Mario has evolved. They're playing Super Mario for the first time. You're see this guy? He's going to grow up to be the most iconic face in gaming. And here's
the new Super Mario Brothers Wii.
Yeah, exactly.
Look how round everything is.
It's kind of the same. It's pretty cool.
Now 4 of you can play.
Yeah.
I would go into the future and bring back a robot girlfriend, and then I would be look how great girlfriends are going to be from the future.
Well, what do you think about robots. That? What about 30 years from now? What if 30 years from now, Greg and Brian could come back right now and show us what video games would be? Would it have the same impact?
I thought you were going to ask me if in 30 years, Greg and Brian will have robot girlfriends.
I think so. That's clear.
Yeah. If we don't have virtual reality sex, all of this will be in vain. entire gaming industry.
Watch the documentary, Demolition Man.
Yes! That's what I was about to say. I want the sex headset.
Now, think about that movie. Sandra Bullock put out in that movie easier than she did in any other movie.
Yeah?
Like, she was just like, Sylvester Stallone's like, oh, you want to do this? And she's like, yeah, sure, let's have sex.
But then they use the headset thing.
Exactly, so they don't actually have sex.
So, yeah, exactly. And remember, they put it on for a second, and it's not real sex. No. It's like them in, like, black space with, like, I think there was, like, yeah, those like twirler baton things.
But that's 10 years from now. Think about 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to live
in I don't think
world.
We solved anything, but there you go.
Also Skyrim.
Yeah. Also the fast
food. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine that?
Also the fast food wars. Taco Bell would be the winner.
I'd bring back Skylanders because it has all those cool toys, and I love that shit in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'd bring back Mega Man 9.
Nothing's changed. You're just pranking yourself.
It'll never get better, guys.
You're just going back and pranking yourself. You're like, no matter what anybody says, this is what it's going to look like. So go ahead and make bets. Go ahead and bet all your money on it, whatever.
This is the future of gaming, guys. This is the best graphics will ever be.
I think Minecraft would actually be a good pick, though, because that would be such a great replacement for Lego blocks. Because I was obsessed with Legos back then. So. Yeah.
And it kind of looks like an NES game turned 3D. So that would totally blow people's minds because they'd be like, wow.
Yeah, there's no future shock associated with
there's no textures or anything like that. Like,
shouldn't you really bring back a terrible game, though, to say, like, make sure everything you do in your life, make sure this type of game never happens? Right?
Kill everyone on the Rogue Warrior development team.
Exactly. Yeah.
That'd be better than, like, you have to wait until you're 40 to play this and then show them something awesome.
Yeah.
Although none of us are 40.
But I mean, if you brought back Rogue Warrior, you might think that game was amazing.
Yeah. You would. Sure. You'd be blown away by
and
how
that,
good it
I
looked.
I think kids, like, will buy games. You know, that's what you go to a GameStop and just buy any game when you're a kid. And they play them and they like them. You know, it's just like, that's still, there's still, like, awe associated with any game, even if it's terrible.
Mm. All right. Well, we've talked about what we would do when we were younger. Now it's time to talk about what we'll do when we're much, much older. Mm. Rob from Down Under writes in and says, so I've just turned 30. I've always played a lot of games, but I find these days less games grab me, and I get bored really easily. It used to be that I'd get a game, finish it, and do a lot of extra things, but these days, half the time I don't even finish the game unless it's a really compelling storyline. I know you guys are all around the similar age. Speak for yourself, Rob. But do you have the same thing? I'm 28. I'll be 29 in April.
Okay.
My theory is that I've pretty much played a lot of different games so much that I'm not enjoying the same things I used to. I'm getting bored.
Mm. You're not. It happens. You're just getting older.
Is that really what's happening?
I think you're playing the wrong games, too.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. I think interesting games waxes and wanes, right? There's definitely times where all I want to do is game, and then there's other times where I'm so tired I just want to watch something inactive, you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to be involved with it. But yeah, and right now it's more along the lines of, for me personally, I have to totally be interested in something, right? Skyrim's great, and I loved it, and I played like 25 hours of it, but then I was like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to just keep doing this, so now I'm kind of in this weird, I'll play DC Universe for a while, or then I'll, you know, I'll watch all of Breaking Bad or something goofy like that.
Attaboy.
But once Kingdom, I'm really excited for Reckoning. When Reckoning gets here, I plan on losing myself to that for a while, and then Mass Effect 3, but it's not like every week I'm playing something for 40 hours. It's like I'm waiting for bigger titles, Keystone things.
And I think it's a matter of breaking up the types of games you play. If you find that you're bored with the games you thought you'd be interested in, you should just go out and try a completely different genre that you never would have checked
out.
Nobody's
going to play PC, Charles.
Yeah.
I've been playing it.
Are you making
that
a plug?
No.
Okay. I agree. And I think the 3DS actually invigorated a lot of what I like about like gaming, because there's just nothing on that that's like anything else. And we're playing crazy stuff. Like we got obsessed with this puzzle game called Pushmo.
Talk to me about this. People keep tweeting me about this, but I haven't played it.
So
I don't know what it is.
Sort of like Catherine. In that,
really?
Yeah.
Well, you're moving blocks, right? And to get to the top of something.
Okay, hot blonde in it?
But you can't, like, push them back and forth. You can only push them into the distance.
No, it's a bunch of little squat sumo-looking dudes.
Yeah, okay, they're little fat sumo guys. I mean, it's totally baby presentation. You know? It's
sold.
Like old pastel and lame. But the puzzles are fun.
But yeah, all the levels look like old school 8 and 16-bit sprites, but then you get, it's like, here's a big Goomba, and then you go to pull out his foot at the bottom.
Each pixel, you yank it out like one or two levels, and then you have to like figure your way up, because you can't pull things once you're standing on them. Anyway, the point is that, like, you know, I like Nintendo stuff, but the 3DS is what I've been playing the most. Like, I haven't gone back to Skyrim in a while either. I don't know, there's just something about just the complete novelty of it. That keeps me interested.
And it's
like,
easy just to
this,
pick up. Like, I'm in the same boat where I can't play a 90-hour RPG anymore. Mm-hmm. I just can't. I just don't have that in my life.
That's all that comes out on PC.
Yeah,
every game is 200 hours long.
No, actually, I just signed up for Steam for the first time over break, and I got a new laptop that plays Dead Space at high settings.
Nice.
The new Dead Space at high settings, and I went through, and obviously they were just giving shit away on Steam. Mm. So I bought a whole bunch of things that I never would have normally played. And I'm having fun. Like, it's nice to have just this compartmentalized little list of games all, across all genres, and I'm trying all these things I never would have normally tried. And I think with downloadable stuff, it helps like that. And so I tell this guy, same thing Sam's saying, like, you know, download some cool shit and play it.
It's
so,
Cube looks cool. I would play that.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet. But yeah, on Steam, yeah. that's one of the nice things. Aside from the sales, where you can pick up, I think they're doing something with Dead Space right now where it's like $5 for one and two or something like that.
Yeah. It's just totally crazy.
But yeah, all the random releases that come out through Steam, you're just like, I don't even know what that is. And then you find out that it's suddenly, you know, it's surprisingly a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I think we're all drawn for the, at least us in at IGN at the moment, right? Where I think most of us are drawn to these little things that are digestible, quick, get in, get out, get a fix and go. Because for us, you know, like it's, you're playing games for your job. So you're playing the 20 hours. You're playing, like, you know, Amalur, they just said the speed run the guy did, doing everything to 100% the game.
It wasn't a speed run. It
was, what do you mean?
Well, you can't. How do you speed run at 200 hours?
Because the speed run, how fast can you 100% the game?
Okay,
so this was every side quest,
like, exactly everything. Mission, but skipping dialogue because they made the game, they know what they're doing, and it took them 200 hours.
Yeah,
and it's like, so I understand that you're doing all that for work, so then you just want to have these quick hits for fun. You want to?
No, that's like writing guides, right? And, you know, the last thing I want to do when I get home is play a game methodically and slowly. Like, I writing guides ruins games for me. Does that, like, that for reviews for you guys? Like, sometimes, some games. When I do review a game, I want to, like, play through it normally, you know, just have fun and do whatever I want. But I'm pretty obsessive with all games, so I kind of take Skyrim home.
More than just guides and stuff. Like, I put together a visual feature, like a visual history of Soul Calibur characters.
Which looks really good. You should go see it.
Thank you. Yeah, go check it out. It's on IGN somewhere. You'll never find it. but after looking, like, you know, just photoshopping pictures of Lizard Man throughout the last 15 years in Soul Calibur, I have no desire to play that new game.
But did you really? Were you really on the hook for Soul Calibur beforehand?
I used to love the Soul Calibur games. They were fun to me. But now, you know, just you stare at something for too long and you stop caring about it.
Sometimes I feel like I have, like, console fatigue from work. I'm like, oh, I'm not playing games at home, and I feel guilty about it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I'm not
playing
games. But then I realize, like, I play tons of games that I don't even realize I'm gaming. Like, I like arcade games, old stupid arcade games. I play those like crazy at home, and
there's
that
some
doesn't
guy
even
listening,
count for me for some reason.
Some guy listening to the show in a coal mine right now, being like, I fucking hate your guys.
I know, right? Some doctor, somebody out there. Lucas writes in, he says, my question is, after reading two articles on IGN, one about the importance of good storytelling, and one about the importance of good gameplay, I have been thinking, which games that have a great story have you played this generation, and which ones did you enjoy playing despite the story?
Ooh. Well, I think Mass Effect is an easy example to point to about, I think that game is all about story. I mean, there is gameplay in Mass Effect, and it works, and, you know, you can make some kind of cool decisions, but it's not really, the gameplay isn't that deep, and most of the time, once you level up a little bit, you're every combat scenario starts to kind of feel the same.
Yeah, you're using the same tactics, especially, right?
Even though you can use your teammates to a degree, but you're playing that game for the story, for the developing relationships, so that you go back to the Normandy time and time again, run around, and you really what's driving you through is you just want to find out when somebody has something new to say.
Exactly, exactly.
That is basically what pushes you through that game, and it's all about role-playing. So that's basically why I play Mass Effect, which is why stuff like planet scanning in the second game and Mako missions in the first game were so irritating, because it's just pointless busy work that takes you away from what makes the game so good.
Yeah.
Also, it looks really nice.
I actually really enjoyed Limbo for the total opposite reason of any of that.
Right, yeah, because Limbo is fun to play, but what's the story? I'm looking for this girl, and it doesn't even tell you. Unless you read interviews, you have no idea what you're doing.
And you're running around, and you're trying to make sense of it. Like, all right, so is this a dream? Did he die in a car accident? Did a bunch of kids throw him out of a treehouse? Mm-hmm. Did he die in the hotel when the sign fell down?
I always thought he asphyxiated himself while masturbating.
Yep, I could see that. I have no idea. Yeah, all right.
Okay.
I think there's like...
It's a David Carradine video game.
I completely agree with you. Like, I think that games are actually just really bad at telling stories. And when they're good at it, they're emulating movies that are good at it. And I think that's a problem with games. Like, I think Uncharted tells a cool story, but when you're running around and shooting a million people, that's a real big problem with the story. You know,
well, isn't it like, a problem with the game? I mean, the fact that, like, that to get to point A to point B, there has to be this, like giant flood
of
people.
I like everything about Uncharted 3. It's, like, almost a perfect game for me. But, like, in terms of telling the story, like, if I actually had to recount the story or transcribe it in any way, it's just a mess.
Yeah, we ran into this problem when we were doing the spoiler cast. Is that, we're so like, wait, what were they good? Because everybody wants to talk about, I mean, like, I play it because I like Nate and I like Elena and I like Sully and I want to see them interact. And they could fucking be chasing the cookie monster. I don't care. It's like, I just want to see them play.
That would be amazing if you were sitting at the end of that.
So it's not really story we like about it, but like the relationships and the dialogue. Exactly. It's the situations. And I think games are good at that. And when I hear people saying like, oh, I want to play an RPG, you know, for the story, I just don't get that. I think games are just really in a hacky state. Portal 2, opposite. Perfect storytelling game.
Yeah, I agree.
And it uses the gameplay, or Portal 1 especially, to tell the story. Like that's one of the only examples of storytelling that I think gaming has done. That and Donkey Kong, I think that's
a good Donkey story. Kong has a great story as well. Yeah. Yes,
Donkey Kong.
Final question comes from Nick. He writes into GameScoop at IGN.com, just like you can. He says, my question is, what are your opinions on games getting released at the start of the year? For me personally, Dead Space 2 is my pick of the game of the year for 2011, but it didn't show up anywhere really in the video game awards. Do you think an early year release has an effect on the game getting more recognition?
Absolutely. This isn't just something for games either. This is everything in the entertainment media industry. Like, if you look at album of the year, movie of the year, people primarily forget stuff that happens in the first few months. I mean,
but that's also, I mean, that also speaks to who you're getting your game of the year from, right? Last year, 2010's game of the year for IGN was Mass Effect, which came out in January. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, it's not like people immediately forget that stuff, but there totally are those meetings where, let's talk about game of the year, this, that, but, oh, and don't forget that, oh, that came out this year. I mean, there are those, like, on the tip of your tongue, but people should do their due diligence to figure out what came out before they weigh in.
We're so focused on the day-to-day here and, you know, month-to-month that sometimes it's easy to forget about something that came out 3 months ago.
Yeah, I mean,
keep a journal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I always say that. Every year I say I'm going to start an Excel spreadsheet and list, and I never do it. I always think, though, that like that way when we get to what are best graphics, I don't sit there and go,
That is what we should all do.
Yeah. All right.
We're just a very short-sighted species in general.
Charles, start the Wolfpack Journal movement.
I like that. We're thinking big today.
what would the Wolfpack Journal have in it? Pause. Just Diablo? Would it have Diablo conference updates?
Rip pages. Some spare
not
meat.
On pages?
Yeah, you can put some meat in there if you can have on a rainy day.
Mm-hmm.
Feed your wolf kids.
The old rainy day meat. Lord knows we all have one of those. Wait, what?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the scoops we have for you. Oh, I screwed that one up. I wrote down how Damon ends the show usually, so I want to screw it up.
I got it. Hey, listeners.
Well, that's all the scoops we have for you, listeners. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Sam. My name is Greg. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Thanks, Greg.
Come home soon, Damon.
Good night. Come get some. Where I live. IGN Game Scoop.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.